Hey everyone, welcome back once again to Citywide Blackout, your home for music, movies, and more. I'm your host, Max Bowen. Well, folks, for this episode, I am very excited to be talking to writer Raphael Scavone for the new comic Hailstone, which you can only check out on Comixology. Now, I began reading this comic a little while back after it was first launched, and I gotta say, it is such a great title. It's a kind of a mix of like the Old West meets horror story, middle of a bleak, darkened forest in the middle of winter. I could not put it down. I read it through once, and then again, and then again. So talking to Raphael, we go into the story behind it, the setting, how they kind of created the story of Hailstone, the characters, looking into the history, because this is set around the time of the Civil War. There's so much to talk about. So kick back, relax, and enjoy the show. My next guest is the writer of the amazing new comic series Hailstone, which you can only get on Comixology. Raphael Scavone joins me. Raphael, welcome to the show, man. It is so cool to have you here.
Oh, thank you, man. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
All right. So this title is centered on the isolated Montana town of Hailstone, where the people are trapped by brutal storm. Food is running very low. They're down to like pine cones and bark to basically stay alive. And people are going missing. That's a great combination. This is going to go well. And Sheriff Denton Ross is basically the more or less the only person who can keep everyone safe and find out just what is going on. So, Raphael, I love this story because it's written to me like a really intelligent horror movie. But where did the idea for this come from?
Oh, this is a not unusual place to get the ideas because it started actually. The idea for Hailstone started like more than 10 years ago, and it wasn't with me. It wasn't with Rafael Albuquerque and Mateo Santoloco. Yeah, you probably know them. We are in the Stealth Club or studio and developing pitches and working new stories. I was looking to write a creator-owned horror story for the first time because I only had the opportunity to work with horror in adapting Studying Emerald from Neil Gaiman and a short story from Batman, Batman Vampire. And Mateus and Rafa had this story. It was previously called Cold Valley. And they had some concepts, and most of the elements I used, it's from that story. I asked them, You planning to do something with the story in the future? And they, no, you can use it. So yeah, let's do that. So I rewrote everything. Of course, I use most of a challenge to stick with some elements. And that's it. And then this is how Hailstone was created, actually the first draft.
Yeah. Okay. The original story versus what you have, are the two anything alike, or are the two really, really different?
The basic elements, the characters. Haas was a character. Tobias, Spencer, all the main characters are the same, and most in the names and their relation. But I changed the profile. I changed actually how the story goes on, how the story unfolds. It's a new story, but it was kind of some, if they pitch me or they brief me in something, you know, like we want you to tell this story, you know, and that's it. It was cool. It was a really cool challenge. I love it.
Excellent. Yeah, I am just like loving like the way that everything unfolds with the story. It's so well put together, man. The final version that you have, did you have to go through a lot of rewrites and changes before you had one that you were really happy with?
Yeah, I usually work in some like we start in comics that I believe in most of creative industry from the small part, like how can I say a pitch or some an idea for a story, and I start to put some elements in that. So this story, Hailstone. It's the outcome is very different from the original story.
Oh, really?
It's very different. It's the most the elements is like Mateus and Rafael previous pitch Cold Valley. There are some like more it's more adventure than the way I put it. You know, I love psychology and terror, psychology terror, like. And how you can work like a fear, because for me, Hailstone is a story about hunger, about isolation and fear, most of it, you know?
Like yeah.
The three main elements for me.
And you definitely use those elements very well, like the opening of the story, and then the girl goes missing just like that. Ah, oh, my God. It's amazing stuff.
I'm glad you like it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. How do you pace a story like this out where it goes over a series of issues? Do you go for like the slow burn terror, or do you go for the more like jump scare terror?
Slow burn.
Slow burn, yeah.
Yeah. I prefer, you know, there's maybe some people who start to, this is something I kind of have a bit of fear in the next issues, because people tend to think the story is going slower than they previously expect. But I think this is a cool thing, because when things get in the pace of something, whoa, you can even breathe, you know? Mm-hmm. That's the thing. I think I like, it's like if you are cooking some food in, you know, like slowly, like spend all day, hours cooking that, you know? Something like that.
Yeah, I get you. You gotta take your time, and I really like the way you do that with the first issue. Like, you take your time introducing the characters, the setting, the town. Tell us, what kind of town is Hailstone?
So this is one thing. Hailstone is of course a fictional town, but the idea is to be like one of the first towns in Montana, and our idea for Hailstone is to have two more titles. Actually, two more. They are the only thing related to this first story. It's the town by itself, you know. Like something. How can I say something more like a true detective series, you know? Like the idea is to stick just to the town and change the time the story is happening. We have two more stories to tell in Hailstone, and the last story is to tell the origin of the town. How the town was, you know, how it was set up the first time back in the 18th century. So this is the idea. I hope it goes well too.
This is set around the time of the Civil War. So it's before, you know, machine guns, rocket launchers, you know, it's like really like old school weaponry. So it's putting people at a definite disadvantage.
Yeah, they started starting in 1864, in the last year, at the end of the Civil War. There's some cool stuff about technology in the story. I won't spoil it. I think you like it. This is one thing why I put the story. I choose to set the story in the Civil War, because I think I don't like war. I think nobody likes war, but it's hard to discuss the technological advance, you know, and how war changed a lot of things, you know. And I try to explore it a bit, you know, of course, in our genre, but this is the idea.
Mm-hmm. And I like the political backdrop, too, because you have the army factory, which is making all the supplies for the soldiers, and the townspeople are like begging them for help for anything. And they're saying, wait, don't you guys support the war? Don't you support like what we're doing?
Yeah, the pick a side, but what's your side? What side are you on? Yeah. And this is one important thing about Hailstone. Even if the story is set in the Civil War, the story isn't about the Civil War. The Civil War is just a background, and of course, when I need to use it, I will use it. But the story is most about what I told is about fears, about hunger, and most of all, isolation. And the power relations, yeah, it's a complex story. But I really like it. I hope people dig it.
Now, do these kinds of things scare you? Like things like isolation, hunger?
No. But I think it, this is my view as a Brazilian. I think in the U.S. It's very. I grew up like. Watching movies or movies in the U.S. and always had like the forest as a terror thing, you know, like a dangerous thing, you know. And this is always kind of wonder why did, you know. But I can understand a bit. I think there's a lot of think about the way the U.S. was the colonization goes on in the U.S. I think people, I think I'm more scared of people, you know, and what people can really do. I don't fear ghosts and stuff like that, but I fear people.
Especially the army captain. He's like drinking wine and having steak and having cigars while folks are like eating, you know, pine cones and bark. What's his overall role in the story?
Well, Captain Spencer will have like a very important role in the story, especially in the fourth issue, in the last issue as well. And yeah, I think he's most clear. He's the bad guy. But it's cool the reason why he's the bad guy. Isn't just because he's one side or other side. I don't want to, you know, to enter in this thing. But the most important thing for me is the evil nature of some people, you know, and how power can change it a lot, you know, for good and for bad. This is the thing.
Oh, yeah. And you can tell he is definitely a little drunk on his own power. The way he kind of like pushes people around, like, I hear your concerns. I don't care. I'm not going to help you.
Yeah. And one thing I try to do in his tone, and I also hope people understand it. I don't try to tell a story very, how can I say, a very easy story. There's a lot of parts of the story people will have to make it by themselves, you know, like you can do it by yourself, you know, like and connect the dots, but I don't want to make it so this is it. Some people probably will find that, I didn't understand, but I probably if you read it, you understand, or if you think maybe in a different way, you can interpret, you can have some your own interpretation, some parts of it.
How do you avoid falling into some of the more familiar like horror movie tropes or patterns with this story?
This is difficult. I have some weird relation with genre. Because I think if you are too stick to a specific genre, you tend to repeat it. You know, you tend to repeat the resources, the way you show, the way you scare people. So I try to avoid it. Of course, I use genre, especially to research, especially to read what I want to read. I try to avoid it, and I try to mix. You know, to find different ways to tell the story. You know, to not fall in this commonplace like. Show a monster and give a scare. Show a vampire and everyone is like scared. Some, you know, no, I don't want to do. It's interesting because some people are trying to guess what will happen the next issues. Some people are telling there's a werewolf or something like that. I don't want to spoil it as well, but yeah, maybe there is, maybe there isn't.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I really liked about the air of mystery for this series, because I felt like, yes, it could be that there's a monster, but it could just be a person, too. You know, you definitely keep the options open for that one.
Yeah. Keep it open. It surprise you.
Exactly.
I hope so.
Exactly. Let's talk about Sheriff Denton Ross. He's basically the hero of the story. He is charged with protecting the town. One thing I kind of liked about him is that, obviously, out of his depth, but he's doing the best he can. He's a very capable guy and kind of making the most of what he can do in this situation. How did you go about building his character?
I start like trying to deconstruct what the classical sheriff looked like. The bossy, badass. No, that's the thing. He's really in the first issue. He doesn't do nothing. He's a hero, but there's another hero in the story.
This
is cool stuff. But you can have him for a hero too, because he's too human. He has a really troublesome past, and I would try to show this his past and what happened in the past, or at least what I can tell what happened in the past. In the next issue, in this issue, the second issue, you already had something about his family. It will be unveiled in the next issue as well. He's a really cool character. I like it. But the idea is to not make a badass sheriff. If I was a sheriff, probably I would be someone like him, you know? I'm human.
Exactly, yeah. He is such like a smart character, you know, the way that he's able to keep like the townspeople calm, keep things organized. He's able to manipulate the captain into giving him supplies. He's definitely not some just like, you know, middle of nowhere yokel sheriff, doesn't know anything.
Yeah. He's a smart guy. He's a smart guy. But this one interesting thing, you start to think he's a smart guy until near the end. And near the end, you find out something really weird. But this is a cool thing.
I can't wait. I cannot wait. All right. I want to also ask about the team that you worked with for this story, because the overall design is so great. The artwork is absolutely amazing. The character designs. Who were the folks you worked with? And as a follow-up question, were they all new to you?
No. I've been working with Rafael Buquerque, who did the covers. I've been working with him he's a kind of mentor, because I was his assistant for, I think, 5 years, 4 years, art assistant, and I can say I properly learned to make comics with him. And Rafael de la Torre, I've been talking with him to work together for, I think, 3 years already. When Hailstone happened, he was my first option, because he was his style was perfect for that, and he also loves Western, and he's so easy to work with. So was a really cool experience. He's great. Well, you could see his work is amazing. And Wesley too, he's an amazing colorist. They both, Rafa de la Torre and Wesley, had already worked together in the past. They are great together. Bernardo Bryce, our latter, we've been working some titles. We worked together in Hidden Society and Funny Creek. He did the letters in Funny Creek as well. And our editor, Beast, she's great. She's amazing. And I'm a very lucky guy, because I just work with cool people, so I can complain.
Oh, yeah.
And for me, comics is a so... I learned to make comics in as a working force, like a... in group, because it's hard to make comics. It takes a lot of time, you know. Sometimes you don't have the budget to do that, so it's difficult to make comics. But when you are working with people so nice as they are, it's amazing. An amazing experience.
And I really think the work speaks to the teamwork too. You know, the overall design has such a great like horror movie feel to it. Like you said, it's got a very like old West feel to it too. One thing I was also curious about is, given the time period, did you have to do a lot of research to get the look right?
Some research, yeah. Of course, it's a fiction, so probably. I did my university in history, so I'm a history teacher. But, you know, if I look some things, I would say, this was impossible at that time. But we're working fiction, so we had some freedom to do that. But, yeah, we did a lot of research. I took a special care with Native Americans. I was actually hoping to have more research on that. But when I started writing the Hailstone, I tried to contact the First Nations, the Blackfoot Confederation, but it was in the peak of the first wave of the pandemic in the U.S., and they are very affected. Yeah, I totally understand they couldn't answer me properly, but I took some classes with Deborah Reese. She's a specialist in Native American representation, so I tried to do my best. I hope I don't offend anyone. Think we have as a compromise and to bring Native American, African American people to stories. You know, representation is so important. You know that. So we should do it and try more. You know. So this one thing very important for me in Hail Songs.
Really key that you at least tried. You at least tried to contact the folks. You took the classes. Why is it important? Why do you think it's so important that with any kind of story that we strive for that kind of historical accuracy?
I think in fiction you have, of course, freedom to play around. And this is a cool thing about people ask me genre for Hail Song, what genre? And I call it weird fiction. Because it's kind of terror, but I use classical elements of terror. I use some fiction stuff, so it's a mix of that. But I think historical accuracy is very important, especially for representation. We already have, unfortunately, all the prejudice with these people, and we should try to fix it. You know, like in the right way. You know, in the best way we can. So I think if I had to do a research, I would try to research the people with less representation in the story I'm working. This is my, I tried. I'm trying. Hey. I hope I did. And for me as a Brazilian, it's even harder because if I was in the US, I could grab a car and go to Montana and try, but I wasn't. So yeah.
Now, you are certainly no stranger to comics. You have worked on titles such as Wonder Woman to Neil Gaiman. You're currently working for Dark Horse for the Hidden Society series. But what about Hailstone was new for you?
The first thing was like was the first horror story I'm writing, as I told you before. So this was very challenging. And one thing I learned a bit when I was working in Funny Creek was to work as the first platform being digital, you know, like a digital comics, because it is releasing in digital now. It will probably come out in printed, but it will take some months to arrive. And there is some specific stuff you should pay attention when you are working for digital, especially in the art. Of course, but sometimes some things in the pacing, because do a heavy reading with the guided view. I especially don't like to read in the guided view. I'm really stick to the page. I always think comics in page after page after page after page. But the panel after panel, it's really, really interesting to the pacing of the story. So I'm trying to improve that. You know, I'm trying to improve that.
I see.
So this I think, was the challenging stuff. You know, like, and at the same time, writing something we can do in digital with a good quality and do in printed as well. So this is a balance.
I see. What would you say was the hardest part about working with horror for the first time?
What's horror? I think, what's your fear? You know, there's in the last issue, you find out some interesting about Haas and about his fear. And I think this was something I asked for the first time when I started to write in Hailstone. And that's it. What's the real fear? You know, and what you fear most is not actually it's that classical Stephen King quote. What you fear most is what is more close to you, is what's more used to. You know, you can feel your car, you can feel your shoe, you can feel your computer, you know, everything. What is your fear? Something cool I'm learning about horror, it's all about the setting. And when you set it, you can, anything could be an element of fear, anything, you know. This is the thing.
Yeah, and you and the team have really done a phenomenal job with a very terrifying setting, because for me, being, you know, alone in the woods during the winter, that's as bad as it gets, basically. So reading this, especially like seeing the wonderful artwork, I was like, yep, I'm terrified. This is wonderful.
All right. Oh, awesome, man.
It's very cool, man. All right. So For the folks who have not yet read Hailstone, and how would you pitch the series?
For me, Hailstone is a story about, as I said before, is a story about hunger, fear, and isolation. And at the same time, I think the story, you can find the worst in people and the best in people. This is like what I tried. And I think at the end, this will be the common sense, like, whoa, that's it. It's about you can be the most evil motherfucker, you can be the best one, you know, like the, so this is the balance, I think. This is how I will pitch Hailstone. But it's a story about hunger, fear, and isolation for me.
There you go. Now, as I mentioned earlier, this series is available exclusively through Comixology, folks. If you don't get it, go get it. It's $6 a month. How did you come to work with them, and what's it been like for you?
We did a deal with, we closed a deal with Hailstone almost 2 years ago, before the pandemic. And we had four titles. One was Funny Creek. It was released I think October last year. Hailstone is the second one. We had a third one already to be launched. A fourth title is already on production. So this was our first deal with Comixology. And it's actually, we now are focusing or creating our own stories. South Club is formed by me, Rafael Buquerque, Matheus Santoloco, and Eduardo Medeiros. And the idea is to work with original stories, create our own stories, and try, of course, to publish it and to use it the best way we can. Comixology has been really amazing to work, actually. We have total freedom to do that. And with all the stuff going on in the pandemic, you probably have heard it, Brazil is in total chaos. So they have been really understanding a lot of stuff, like some delays, some, you know, I'm loving the experience. It's something, as I said before, I'm not used to do digital comics, to create for digital, but I'm getting I'm getting there. I'm learning.
Yeah, it's.
I don't know about you. You are used to reading digital or just in paper, or
so I actually started off reading paper comics. And I would say I kind of struggle with switching over to digital, but now that I've done it, I can see the advantage of both mediums. Like I love having a bookshelf full of comics, but I also love having an iPad full of comics too. You know, both have their uses.
Yeah, lighter. Yeah,
lighter. Yeah, yeah. Like for me, I definitely buy comics in print if it's a series that I really, really like. But, you know, it's you know, financial, it's a space issue. So I can definitely see the use and the value of going digital, too.
Yeah, I was very impressed because I learned that a lot of people reading in cell phones. It makes a lot of sense, the guided deal, because you can do panel by panel and, well, I can't do that.
Yeah.
But
how would you say that the industry is changing for folks who want to do their own titles?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's changing for good. I think it's becoming clear. It's for me, it's like another cycle, like the old image cycle, you know. I think we're in the same cycle again, because I think people are realizing creators are more important than the big publishing, you know, like DC, Marvel. I love DC. I grew up reading Marvel. I love both, but at the same time, it's much harder to develop your own story, to create your characters, to make them being accepted by the audience. But at the same time, you have a freedom you won't never have working DC or Marvel or, you know, like the big ones like that. So I think it's the industry now is shifting. It's already doing it. I think it's going on for years already, but I think it's shifting for a more for a bigger, how can I say, but for a growing, ever growing demand or creator only. So I don't know about you, but I'm reading, I almost can't read Marvel and DC anymore. I'm reading much more like creator only stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, me too. Oh, yeah. That, I would say, is what I really loved about Comixology, is that you can get all these different titles. They're all creator-owned. It's unique.
Yeah.
It's different. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love DC. I love Marvel. But there's a certain level of predictability there. It's been a while since a Marvel title genuinely surprised me. The creator-owned stuff is always surprising me. I'm always being thrown for a bit of a loop with unexpected twists and turns and character deaths and so forth. So I see what you mean there. Well, Raphael, man, this has been an absolutely amazing conversation. I've loved talking to you about the series. Hailstone is definitely one of my new favorites. And Raphael, before we go, where do folks go to learn more about you and follow your work?
You can go to Stout Club website. We have some our titles there. It's stoutclub.com. You can check my social media accounts. I use Twitter and Instagram, and I'm not too active on there, but I'm trying to spread the word about what I'm doing. And I'll have new books coming out this year, I believe, after Hailstone. And that's it. It was amazing talking to you, man.
Oh, likewise. Likewise.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Picture this. You finished your first book and nailed it. The plot, the characters, all the twists and turns. This one's a winner, and all you need is the right cover. If you've got my art skills, this is the part where panic usually sets in. Enter the cover villain, hero to writers everywhere. Founded by noted author Remy Flagg, Cover Villain focuses on composite image covers for science fiction and fantasy writers. Give them the details, and they'll craft a cover using popular trends that everyone will want to see. But wait, you say, I've got ideas of my own. No problem, as Cover Villain loves a good collaboration. As they say, our goal is to put a little villain in every cover we make. Want to know more? Then head to covervillain.com and follow them on Facebook and Instagram. All right, folks, hope you enjoyed learning all about Hailstone. If you're a comic lover or just love a really good horror story, I highly recommend checking it out. Up next, we are talking to LA-based pop artist Sheer for her brand new single, Beep, which drops on June 18th, so you'll get to hear the whole story here first. This is a really cool song with a very powerful message behind it, all about women knowing their worth and never, ever settling for less. And we talk all about that, as well as the really unique sound that goes along with the story. Originally from Israel, pop artist Sheer joins me to talk about her new single, Beep. Sheer, welcome here. It's great talking to you.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for having me. Okay. I'm excited.
All right. I want to talk about the story behind this song, because I really love the theme of it being that women shouldn't settle for anything less than their standards. Why did this become the theme of the song?
It's kind of a tough subject to talk on, because it was really hard creating the track. We were really like, okay, what we want to bring to the table, what we want to talk about. And then the producer made the melody, and I really loved it, and we kind of connected it to my roots, and I thought about the story I wanted to bring to the table, which was kind of woman empowerment and, like, don't settle for anything less than what you deserve. And that's how we came up with the idea, and we kind of took it to the other side of it, like, super feminine, and I love it, and I can't wait for people to hear it.
Oh, like, yeah. June 18th, this track drops on. How do you handle release days? Are you, like, super nervous when those days approach?
I'm super nervous. I'm, like, super nervous. I'm all up in my team. I'm calling them. I'm like, wait, did it get to there? Did they hear it? What's going on with this and that? I love when everything is perfect. And I'm kind of a control freak. I don't like talking about it, but it's true. I don't know. I just like when everything is going well. So I'm super nervous. Yeah, whenever we have something big, like a release is big. A release is like my baby. It's like, okay, we worked on it. We shot a video for it. It's a serious matter. So yeah, I take it really, it's close to my heart.
I'll bet, I'll bet. And speaking of the video, I watched that too. That is such a cool video. Did you plan it out?
Yes. It started off as something completely different. Like we thought maybe we should do a crazy girl that is like super demanding or something super weird. And then we were, okay, not really crowd material. Like, we're not going to do that second song. So we decided to switch to something that is a lot more fun. Just like driving around in the night, a girl falling in love. She wanted to go to an event and suddenly she sees this hot guy or something like that. And she's like, okay, she has the power. She's a strong woman. She's taking him off, storming away from the party, and they're going off and having fun in the night. Yeah, I still love the concept. We came up with it, me and the director. I still love it. I had a lot of fun shooting it. I think it was the funnest video I've ever had. And we shot a few more for the next releases after that. It was just fun. My partner in the music video, the guy, was really, really fun to work with, which is not always like that. So shout out to him. And yeah, it was really fun with the crew and everything. So wait, what did you think of the video?
I really loved it. One of the things that I got was that you and the guy seem to have such chemistry. Had you worked together before?
No, we just met on set and it was super fun. And it doesn't happen often. It really doesn't. Because sometimes, like, you are not prepared, because as the artist, you have to do something like, you can't spend the time on set, like, getting to know each other. You have to do the shots or do the makeup and stuff like that. And we got to really talk because we were driving around in the car. That's the whole theme. We were driving around in the car and it was like just getting to know each other, because the camera couldn't like see what we were talking about. So we just talked the whole night and it was super, super fun.
Cool, cool. Now, this video is about 3 minutes long, but how long does it actually take to shoot it?
I think it took us 2 days. I don't really remember because I did it like 4 months ago. I already shot the next ones and the next ones are also amazing. So we have to talk throughout the next ones. I think it took us 2 days and yeah, it was a lot of preparations. We prepared like 2 months prior to the video.
Wow. So all that work for like a 3 minute video.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of sad when I think about that. Because whenever it was over, it was like, okay, over, new tracks going on.
Exactly, yeah. So are you the type of person to, like, when you get something done, like a song or video, do you kind of, like, linger on it? Or is it just, no, that's done, get it out there, on to the next project?
I always think about it. I'm always, like, analyzing, okay, what could we have done better? I love it, but I want to be able to progress with every video and every song and create a balance between what I love from hometown, like to connect my roots to the songs and to the video if I can. So I have to think. With every video, I think, how can I do something a little extra to make everything connect? Yeah, I get to think about it for a while.
I want to go back a bit to the theme of the song, because I imagine that the notion of a woman having standards, some people are like, oh, well, she's just being too, like, greedy, or she's putting, like, the bar too high.
Yeah.
What does it mean to you to have standards?
I mean, I was in a bad relationship once, so I know how it is when it's tough. And I just feel like, you know, when you have something real, and you shouldn't settle for someone who's compromising on you. Like, why would you compromise yourself? And the song, when I'm thinking of it, it could have easily been like turned into like a greedy woman or something that is bad. But I love how powerful she is. I'm talking like in a third person, because it's true. It's like a woman who knows her worth is stronger. It's a lot stronger than any other woman, a woman that is confident, knows what she wants. And I love it. It's still, I've recorded so many songs and Beep is probably like one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. Easily. Favorites, because it talks about how you want to be gentle with yourself and you still don't want to give up on yourself in a relationship. Like, you just deserve the best and aim to it and it'll happen.
is this something that you had trouble with, having that kind of confidence to say no to this person? They're not good for me. I know that I'm worth more than that.
For sure. I mean, I think we wrote the song because of experiences, me and the team, the co-writers. We all had, like, everybody have some kind of a forbidden love that is bad or whatever, and they get burned. And we changed it, and we decided to hold ourselves and just do something great. Like, really make the woman stand out in the song and not look at the man's perspective, not just because it doesn't matter, but just because we were a team of, I think it was the producer who was a man, and we were three women co-writers. So girl power all the way. And I love how it turned out. Like, it's the first time, not the first time, but there aren't a lot of songs who make the woman really, really be like the dominant one in a relationship. So it's cool to be a part of that.
I want to ask also about the melody for this song, because I loved it. It was definitely a very like pop melody, but I think it had a little something more to it too. What was the back and forth in coming up with this?
So it's very cool. My producer came up with a melody. I'm from Israel, and my producer is Lebanese. So we were kind of connected in our roots. Israel and Lebanon are neighbors. So when we first met, we were like, okay, we need to do something that has a Mediterranean edge or a little, just add a little spice to it. And it worked really, really well. He came up with a melody. And I remember before that day, like a day before, he came up with a melody and we were like, okay, no, it's not it. It's not that. And then the next day, and he came up with Beep and we were shocked. We immediately started working, getting in the booth, doing it. He added a lot of Mediterranean stuff to it underneath in the back, just to make it connect to us a little more. That's why I loved working with him, because we had something in common, especially in the pop industry today. It's cool to have a producer that knows what you want. It's cool.
Agreed. And I definitely got that something extra listening to it. Like it did, like I said before, it definitely had that pop sound to it, but it definitely had a little more to it too. And I couldn't really place it exactly, but
yeah. So that's us.
Do all of your songs have that kind of something extra?
I started off that way because when I came here, I really wanted to represent a little like something from my country. But I think it changed. I got here and I was like super like, okay, I'm gonna do pop, a little Mediterranean trap, adds cool vibes. I still love it. But I think I learned a lot from my process of being here, that it's not everything, and that I need to focus on doing more stuff, that not to please a lot of people from there, but to please myself and to grow musically. Like, the pop industry is huge, and there are so many genres you can fit inside pop. So why settle for doing one when you could try and do whatever you want and maybe make it work? It's just fun to explore. And that's the time. I'm just starting having fun with the sounds.
Excellent. So what is going to be next for you after Beep drops?
I mean, I don't know. I'm super excited. I'm, like, nervous. I'm not sure after Beep drops. Okay. We're going to be releasing a lot of music. We have so many songs ready that I can't wait for people to hear, because they're great. They really do. I swear to God, not because it's me. So I really want people to hear that. And I'm super focused about music, maybe a little bit of like acting. Yeah, I love acting. So maybe do something like that. I'm still trying to figure it out. But music is the main thing for sure.
Excellent. Well, Shir, love talking to you. This has been a lot of fun and absolutely loving the song. It's really good.
Thank you.
Folks, check it out. It drops on June 18th. Check out the music video as well. And in the meantime, where do folks go to learn more about you and check out your work?
So my Instagram is Shir Israel. It's Sheer Israel. And thank you so much for having me. I had a great, great time.
Hi, this is singer Kate Eppers, and you're listening to Citywide Blackout.
That brings this episode to a close. Don't forget to follow the show on Facebook under Citywide Blackout, Twitter and Instagram, it's Citywide Max, and listen to the show on Spotify, Podbean, TuneIn, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and on Boston Free Radio every Saturday at 10 p.m. And if you can, leave a comment, leave a review. I always love hearing from the listeners. If you've got someone in mind for the show, you can hit me up at citywidemax@yahoo.com. Well, to close things out, I've got the brand new song from Sheer, Beep. As always, keep those ears open.
Can you do it? Don't keep me waiting too long.